Chapter 18, About Mr. Moonlight and His Scar. Christian and Big Tiger were fast asleep. They didn't even notice that the truck had stopped and the sun was shining on their faces. Only when Good Fortune shouted, "Up, you lazy scamps!" did Christian awake. "What does the honored Mr. Good Fortune want?" asked Big Tiger, rubbing his eyes. "I want all sorts of things. Perhaps the young princes want something, too." Good Fortune was holding a basket. "I have to tell you several things," he announced. "Just look around you." "The snow is gone," cried Christian, astonished. "It's past midday," Good Fortune explained, "and we are in Mongolia. The sun is shining, the snow is gone, and we shall eat." "Yes," cried Christian, "that's what we want." "For that we need a fire," continued Good Fortune, "and for the fire we need argal." "What's that, honored sir?" asked Big Tiger. "Argal is dried dung, and you must go and look for some." "But only pick up camel dung. It burns best. Here's a sample," he said, pointing to the basket. "In 10 minutes, the basket must be full." Christian and Big Tiger took the basket, in which there were some nice round little balls, quite light and dry. "You'll find most around the well," Good Fortune called after them. Neither of them could see any well, but as they were now desert travelers, they set out bravely to look for it. The truck was standing in a flat, basin-like hollow. All around were low hills covered with dry steppe grass, but not a single tree. In the west, the round dome of a mountain showed over the shimmering horizon. Several riding tracks ran down from it through the yellow grass and converged at a bare space in the middle of the Great Depression. "I'm sure the well is in that bare space where there's no grass," said Christian. They set out for it, and when they found camel droppings on the way, they picked them up and tested if they were dry. As they approached the spot, a man on a camel, followed by another camel carrying a water cask on each side, came over the ridge of hills in the west. He caught up with Christian and Big Tiger just as they had located the well. "There's another one over there," said the man, pointing with his whip to a water hole a little distance off, beside which stood a long wooden trough. The man alighted. He was wearing a blue coat, which reached to the top of his riding boots. Instead of a belt, he wore a dark red silk sash, from which hung an embroidered pouch and a dagger with a silver handle. His pointed silk hat, which was also dark red, was almost completely hidden by a circle of fox fur, under which the copper-brown Mongolian face grinned amiably. Christian and Big Tiger bowed in silence. "Amor chen beno?" greeted the stranger. And a note tells us, "Amor chen beno, do you feel light?" a Mongolian greeting. "Bolna," answered Christian. The Mongol laughed. "I notice that one must speak to you in Chinese," he said. "It would be better," Big Tiger admitted. "You're lucky to have met me," said the Mongol, "for very few around here speak Chinese. You must learn Mongolian." "We would very much like to," said Big Tiger. "But we don't know how to begin," said Christian. "That's quite simple," the man declared. "You must ask, Ene Yubeno. Then everyone will know what you want." "What does Ene Yubeno mean?" asked Christian. "Ene Yubeno means, what is this?" "Aha," said Big Tiger and Christian. Then, pointing to the well, Big Tiger asked, "Ene Yubeno?" "Hutuk," replied the man. "Hutuk," repeated Christian and Big Tiger, and the Mongol nodded approvingly. Suddenly, he grasped Christian under the armpits and lifted him onto the camel. Then, pointing with his whip in the direction from which he had come, he said several times, "Wang, Sunit, Wang." "Lift me up too, please," pleaded Big Tiger. The Mongol lifted him up beside Christian on the saddle, and from there they could see over the edge of the hills the yellow glazed tile roofs of a few houses. "Wang," repeated the Mongol, and then, pointing again to the well hole, he said, "Wang, nay, Hutuk." Christian got an inspiration. "Wang is the name of the man who lives over there." "Wang means king," the Mongol explained proudly. "And this is the well of the king," said Big Tiger, also beginning to grasp things. The Mongol nodded, and Christian and Big Tiger jumped down from the camel's back. Then they stood chatting pleasantly with the Mongol. While they talked, they filled the water casks, and when they had finished, the Mongol pointed out a lot of camel dung at the next well, where the animals were watered. As they had helped him to draw the water, he helped them to collect the dung, and the basket was soon full. "Where do you come from?" "And where are you going?" asked the Mongol. "We come from there, and we're going off there," said Big Tiger, who had decided they must be more discreet, and he pointed to the east and then to the west. The Mongol gave a start, and Big Tiger thought his evasive answer had given offense, but it was not that. "You speak like one who has been in the grassland before," said the Mongol warily, and then he looked down. "I must make a request of you," he said. "Show me the ring on your thumb." Big Tiger was frightened, and his hand trembled as he laid it in the Mongol's. "That's it," murmured the man. A deep flush suddenly suffused his copper-colored face. He pushed his fox fur hat off his forehead, and Big Tiger and Christian saw, just under the hairline, a big, long, still imperfectly healed scar. It ran like a fiery red ribbon from one temple to the other, and looked so frightful that Christian and Big Tiger wondered if they now had really got something to be afraid of. "Where did you get the ring?" asked the Mongol in tense excitement, and the scar on his forehead changed from red to blue. "It doesn't belong to me," replied Big Tiger evasively. "I know that," replied the Mongol. "I cannot ask you again. Therefore, tell me here and now how the ring came to be on your hand." "A holy man gave it to me, saying, 'This ring seeks its owner. For this reason, I wear it on my thumb.'" "Let us sit down somewhere," the Mongol suggested. From the leg of his boot, he took a thin-stemmed pipe with a nephrite mouthpiece, filled the miniature silver bowl with tobacco, and began to smoke. "There are people waiting for us," said Christian. "We're in a hurry," pleaded Big Tiger. "There's nothing to hurry for," the Mongol retorted coolly. "You needn't be frightened. I don't want to know who your holy man was." Then Christian and Big Tiger squatted beside the Mongol as if they were quite used to that posture. They waited for him to speak, but he went on, puffing blue, stinking clouds of smoke into the air. "My name is Moonlight," he began at last. "I'm one of 20 men who knows the ring that is on your thumb." "We have heard of the 20 men," said Big Tiger. "The holy man said they had sworn an oath," added Christian uneasily. Moonlight's face darkened. "Do you know more than that?" he asked. "Do you know the name of the man to whom the ring belongs?" "We do not know it," said Christian and Big Tiger together. "Then it's not for me to tell you his name. But if you meet him, tell him Moonlight is alive. In the 11th month of last year, he lay as one dead by the shores of the Gashan Nor." Gashan Nor, a note tells us, is Bitter Lake, a salt lake in the Gobi Desert. "The Gashan Nor is as big as the sea. The wolves might have eaten me as I lay there, for I was more dead than alive, as you can well imagine." "Yes, we can," Christian admitted, glancing at the scar. "Things like that happen," said Moonlight. "It's not very pretty, is it? A man could bleed to death. Luckily, four men of the Western Sunit tribe, who were returning from a pilgrimage, came my way. They took me with them and looked after me. When I had recovered, they invited me to remain with them. I said, 'I shall remain 4 moons with you, and then I shall return to the desert.' The men understood what I wanted to do for them, and they said, 'We want no thanks.' But I begged them to consent. I said, 'You have made a long journey and need a rest. Allow me, therefore, to do your yearly service with the Wong instead of you.' They did not wish to accept, but I insisted, and I went to the Wong, who lives over there behind the hill. The Wong allowed me to do their service, and I am therefore serving him a month for each of my 4 rescuers. I shall be free again the first day of the 5th month, and shall then return to the man who owns the ring." Moonlight knocked the ash out of his pipe and stuck it carefully back in his bootleg. "We have heard all, respected elder," said Big Tiger, reaching for the basket. "We shall forget nothing," Christian assured him, standing up. "Don't be in such a hurry," said Moonlight. "I shall go back with you. You need fresh water for cooking. I can give it to you. Then you needn't go back again to the well." "Many thanks," said Christian. "That is more than we dared expect." "It's nothing at all," replied Moonlight. "I want to see the people with whom you're traveling." "Good Fortune is the name of one of them," said Big Tiger, "and he's a soldier of General Wu." "Indeed," said Moonlight. but his face did not betray what he thought of soldiers in general, or of good fortune in particular. He led the two camels one after the other by the reins with an air of assumed indifference. "And the other man?" he asked casually. "Isn't there another?" "There's another man," said Christian, stealing a glance at Big Tiger. "Yes, there's a second man," Big Tiger said. They stood a moment, as if they found the basket heavy, and together they watched to see what kind of face Moonlight would make when they would tell him who the other man was. "He says he's a merchant," began Christian. "And people call him Greencoat," Big Tiger burst out. "I'm very glad to hear that," said Moonlight, without batting an eyelid. "I'm very glad indeed. I've been wanting for a long time to meet that gentleman. But listen, it's best not to tell him my name. The soldier Good Fortune need not hear it either. Can you keep it to yourselves?" "We're very experienced in keeping names secret," asserted Christian. "I've noticed that," said Moonlight, laughing. "You're bright lads, and seem born for the steps. Now remember, neither of you knows my name." "We've forgotten already," declared Big Tiger. "No one is to know anything," repeated Moonlight emphatically. "Nobody," affirmed Christian and Big Tiger. They reached the truck, where Good Fortune had made a small fire. He had been getting impatient, but was pleased when he saw the Mongol bringing water. Moonlight pushed his hat down on his forehead and greeted Good Fortune and Greencoat with, "Have you had a good journey?" Good Fortune said it was tolerable up till now, and he had lost only one headlight. "Much can be seen with one eye," said Moonlight. Greencoat remained silent, and apart from a muttered greeting, behaved as if the Mongol were not present. "I learn with pleasure that you are the celebrated merchant, Mr. Greencoat," said Moonlight, turning to him. "So I am. What do you want of me?" "Oh, nothing at all. I would not have thought it was you. No, indeed, I really want nothing of you." "Nonsense!" cried Greencoat indignantly. "Why, then, are you talking to me?" "Your fame resounds to the skies," asserted Moonlight. "Therefore I greatly desired the honor of exchanging two words of greeting with you." "To be sure," snapped Greencoat, looking up at the sky as if he expected rain. Moonlight wrinkled up his face and grinned. "Your Mr. Greencoat is a gentleman of few words," he said aside to Good Fortune. Then he made the camel with the water casks kneel down, and when Good Fortune had filled two pails, he climbed into the saddle. "Farewell," he cried. "I wish you comfort at every hour." "Goodbye," cried Big Tiger and Christian. As he rode away, Good Fortune looked after him for a long time. Lost in thought, he scratched his head and pushed his cap back. But then suddenly he got busy, put the pot on the iron tripod over the fire, and shouted, "Fetch the kneading board, Compass Mountain! Fetch the rolling pin, Big Tiger!" While they ran to the truck, he began to mix the flour, and Greencoat looked on. "I'd swear I've seen that fellow somewhere before," said Good Fortune. "I haven't," replied Greencoat brusquely, looking up again at the sky. But the sky was blue, the sun was shining, and the water was beginning to boil.